Health officials seeking stricter border controls for travelers from the Middle East. That's after two overseas Filipinos tested positive for the COVID-19 variant, first detected in India. We'll discuss this further with Health Undersecretary Maria Rosario Vergere. Makati and San Juan begin their rollout of Pfizer's coronavirus jabs. The president's chief legal advisor advising the public to use common sense to determine if Mr. Duterte is making a joke or not. We'll tackle that as well as the debate on the West Philippine Sea issue that did not push through with Vergel Santos of the Center for Media Freedom and Responsibility. That's later on in the program. And dozens are killed as the conflict between Israel and Islamists in Gaza intensifies. Hi, I'm Carmina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Hey, thanks for joining us. And for those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, glad you could join us today. Bodies continue to pile up in India due to its unprecedented surge in COVID-19 cases and deaths. And as this report tells us, volunteers have been collecting the ashes of the unclaimed victims to give them a respectful send-off.
At New Delhi's main crematorium, two volunteers from NGO Sri Deodan Siwa Samiti have been quietly collecting the ashes of India's unclaimed dead, giving the bodies a send-off as per Hindu traditions. Ashish Kashyap respectfully washes the remains and prays over them.
These are the unclaimed remains of COVID-19 victims. During this pandemic, the relatives of these victims abandoned them. However, our organization collects these remains from all the crematoriums and performs the last rituals in Haridwar so that they can achieve salvation. 95% of the remains belong to COVID-19 victims.
95% corona se ekatrit wo hain astiyan.
The ashes are taken to the river Ganges, a river many Hindus consider holy, for a final ritual, which is said to ensure the souls of the deceased go to heaven and escape the cycle of rebirth. The following graphic video was obtained from Ghazipur district, where about 100 bodies of suspected COVID-19 patients were floating in the Ganges. Several villages along the riverbanks were alerted by the smell and informed the local authorities. India's coronavirus crisis shows scant sign of easing on Tuesday. The country's seven-day average of new cases is at a record high, with over 390,000 reported cases. International health authorities are warning the country's variant of the virus poses a global concern. India also leads in the daily average number of new deaths reported. According to a Reuters tally, the country accounts for one of every three deaths reported worldwide each day. For the volunteers at New Delhi's main crematorium, the abandoned deceased deserve a respectful farewell despite the overwhelming numbers.
Global COVID-19 cases nearing 160 million. The worldwide death toll now standing at over 3.3 million. The U.S. still has the most infections at over 32.7 million, but India is rapidly closing in with nearly 23 million cases. Meanwhile, the Philippines recorded just over 4,700 new cases Tuesday. This brings the country's total to 1.1 million. Active infections stand at over 56,000, while the overall death toll is at 18,620. The Philippine Health Department are recommending stricter border controls for travelers coming from the Middle East. That's after two returning overseas Filipinos tested positive for the COVID-19 variant discovered in India, the first such cases here in the Philippines. The OFWs came from Oman and the United Arab Emirates and had no travel history to India.
I am in touch with our WHO country representative. In the same manner that we had expanded our travel ban beyond India, rest assured, I will make that recommendation.
San Juan City begins rolling out Pfizer COVID-19 vaccines. Let's check on the situation there from Angel Movido. She now joins us. Angel, what else can you tell us?
Hi, Carmina. A total of 198 individuals have been given their first dose of Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine in San Juan City today. According to Mayor Francis Zamora, the figure for today serves as a test run for the rollout of the Pfizer vaccine, as the number of registrants for Pfizer will also be closely monitored to ensure that no dosage is wasted. This is because, unlike other vaccines, Sinovac and AstraZeneca, the Pfizer vaccine, once diluted, should be administered within 2 hours. A quick substitution list is also being followed in case of last-minute no-shows. On Tuesday, San Juan City has received a total of 11,700 doses of the Pfizer vaccine, as it is set to finish inoculations for the priority groups, to include medical frontliners, senior citizens, and persons with comorbidities. Zamora notes that so far in San Juan City, the vaccination acceptance rate has increased following the rollout of Sinovac and AstraZeneca vaccines. The increase in confidence, he says, is also due to having no reports of major adverse effects among vaccinees. As of today, San Juan City has more than 60,000 residents who have registered for the COVID-19 jab. About 72,000 people more are needed to register and soon be inoculated to achieve the city's herd immunity, which is at 70% of the population. While Zamora recognizes the delay in the supply of vaccines for the Philippines, he says he's so far contented with the city's pace on vaccination, citing that the delivery of vaccines arrived as told by the Department of Health. Along with the rollout of Pfizer vaccine, about 1,500 individuals are also set to be inoculated with AstraZeneca today. The city health office also says administering AstraZeneca doses are also a priority at this point, since doses will be expiring by end of June and July. San Juan City targets about 3,000 inoculations per day, soon as the 100,000 doses of AstraZeneca vaccines arrive. Carmina.
Thanks a lot. Angel Movido there joining us on the line. Keep safe, Angel, and take care. And from the city of San Juan, we now go to Makati, where authorities have begun administering Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine to residents. Angel Bagawisa now joins us with the latest. Angel, what else can you tell us?
Hi, Carmina. Good afternoon. Makati residents came to the Makati Medical Center expecting to get the Sinovac COVID-19 jab on Wednesday, became the first from the city to receive the Pfizer vaccine. The initial inoculation of the awaited vaccine brand to an expected 300 to 500 people this first day went smoothly. That's according to the hospital's medical director, Dr. Saturnino Javier. Javier said they have so far been able to maintain what he described as the stringent proper temperature requirement of the Pfizer jab. He added they only needed to fine-tune certain issues with the vaccine administration process, which they had prepared for in time. Over 5,000 Pfizer doses were allocated to Makati City, which has collaborated with a private hospital to store the jab in its ultra-low freezer facilities. The jab needs to be kept at a temperature between negative 70 to negative 80 degrees Celsius. The MMC received 195 vials of the Pfizer vaccine on Tuesday night, which is around more than 1,000 doses. The hospital said each vial could be used for 5 to 6 doses each. Javier said these were immediately placed in a bio refrigerator to thaw the vaccine before it was administered within 3 to 5 days.
My recollection is that within 15 minutes, you should be able to do it. So they only aspirate it when they're here already. So there may be some degree of waiting for the vaccinees because we want to make sure that they receive the vaccine in its optimum condition. We're very particular of the wastage because these are limited quantities of vaccine. So we want to make sure that we don't have any vaccine that goes to waste.
Now, Carmina, Makati is among specific areas in the Philippines that has been able to administer or will be able to administer the first batch of Pfizer vaccines brought into the country from the COVAX facility. Aside from the local government's collaboration with the private hospital, for its cold storage facility, it said it has brought or it has bought its own freezer to handle more vials. In keeping with COVAX requirements, the only priority groups encompassing medical frontliners, senior citizens, and persons with comorbidities were allowed to receive the jab. The Makati Medical Center targets vaccinating up to 600 people every day up to the weekend until its allocation of the Pfizer vaccine is used up.
Thanks a lot, Anjo Bagawisan, there joining us on the line. Take care, Anjo. Keep safe. Moving on, the mayor of Manila hitting what he calls the very slow pace of the vaccine rollout in the country. Mayor Isko Moreno says Manila last received a supply of Sinovac shots in April. And on Tuesday night, it received some 1,170 vials of Pfizer vaccines. He says these are not enough since Manila is one of the most densely populated cities in the Philippines. He adds millions of doses have already arrived in the country, but they remain in storage facilities. Well, the Health Department assures the public all of the AstraZeneca vaccine doses donated to the Philippines will be used right away. Health Secretary Francisco Duque III says local governments in Metro Manila have committed to vaccinating 120,000 persons per day. Government has already administered 1.6 million to its 2 million, or make that of its 2 million AstraZeneca doses.
We will make sure nothing will expire. It will all be jabbed. It will all be used for inoculating our A1 to complete the healthcare workers, no? The A2, the senior citizens, and then the adults with comorbidities. We will use everything as first dose. So yes. Hindi na kami mag-aantay for the second dose. Yung second dose supply will arrive. On the strength and on the commitment of the WHO country representative.
It was former COVID-19 task force advisor Dr. Tony Lechon who warned the AstraZeneca shots could expire given the slow pace of vaccination in the country. Well, the Philippines has administered over 2.5 million COVID-19 vaccines. Of that number, more than 514,000 are second doses. Only 24% of medical frontliners, or the A1 priority group, have been fully vaccinated. Only 6% of senior citizens, or the A2 priority group, had received the full shots. The Philippine government hopes to vaccinate all 1.7 million health workers and at least 70 million Filipinos before the year ends.
Kumuha na tayo ng commitment ng ating mga regional offices. Kinuha na rin nila yung commitment ng kanilang lokal na pamahalaan. Kinausap talaga na ito yung available na vaccine na pwede na nilang i-jab. Ang problema noon was there was no vaccine that was available. So medyo hesitant silang mag-start at maging agresibo. Now that we have enough vaccines, I'm sure they will be happy to receive it, especially in areas na matataas.
It's not a matter of if, but when. We've heard the Secretary of Health say this about the entry of the novel coronavirus into the country when it was still in Wuhan, when more transmissible variants were first found in the UK and South Africa. The virus respects no boundaries. And it is only yesterday when the Health Department confirmed the mutation ravaging India as we speak is now here. In the Philippines, was this bound to happen, even with border controls? Dr. Maria Rosario Vergara joins us now. She's spokesperson of the Department of Health. Undersecretary, welcome to the program, and thanks for joining us today.
Yes, good afternoon, ma'am, and good afternoon to all of you.
So let's talk about the patients first, the two who tested positive for the virus first detected in India. How are they doing?
Well, both of them are already considered recovered. And according to our experts, are non-infectious already because they were able to complete more than the period required for isolation and quarantine.
How many people did they come in contact with to begin with?
Well, actually, if we look at the incident, we can see that the protocols were followed because both of these individuals were able to complete their quarantine and isolation period, as I've said, more than the period required at the national facility. And when they got back to their local governments, they again redid no their quarantine period. So actually, the case one only has recovered or were was announced or declared to be recovered last Monday because of this double quarantining that was done to him. And then the other one was declared recovered after more than the period required for 14 days of quarantine.
Mm-hmm. And the genome sequencing was finished when?
It was run last Saturday, that was May 8th. The results were out Monday night, and so we were able to announce it Tuesday. So what happens would be that every traveler that comes in the country will have double swabs. And the existing protocol then between April 1 to 30 was that we get the samples from the 5th to the 6th day of quarantining. Mm-hmm. So they were swabbed on the 6th day and the results were out and they were transferred to an isolation facility and their samples were sent to the Philippine Genome Center.
Mm-hmm. So, but between the time that samples were taken and the samples were run, how many days was that in that gap?
They were isolated, actually. So the samples were sent to the Philippine Genome Center. I think that was last week.
Last week only. Yes. But their entry was in the beginning of April and yes, middle of April.
Yes, April 10 and April 20. But what we can say would be that even though the samples were not sent immediately, they were completely isolated. So the protocols were there, the safeguards were there.
Mm. And how many more samples are you looking at as we speak that is being suspected of having that the mutation in India?
Actually, whenever there are returning overseas Filipinos or travelers coming in, they all have to undergo the double swabbing. One is for RT-PCR and one is for the genome sequencing. So whenever there would be positive cases among these returning overseas Filipinos, we immediately send it to the Philippine Genome Center.
Hmm. Let me ask you this, Dr. Vejere, was this bound to happen, the entry of the variant first detected in India here in the Philippines?
Well, if we will look at our geography, we are not an isolated country. Our borders are open. And with this, the variants are happening or are existent in 43 countries already. And, you know, because of the porousness of our borders, these variants may easily come in. That's why we have to intensify our border controls so that we can be able to prevent further incoming variants from other countries.
Before we talk about the border controls, I want to talk about the latest on the contact tracing. On the same flight, what's the latest on that?
Well, for the case one, we were able to identify 6 close contacts. We say close contact within the airplane because we have this protocol of having these 4 seats in front, 4 seats at the back, and 4 seats beside, left and right. So we were able to identify 6 close contacts for case one. And for case two, we have 26 close contacts. All of them are being verified as to the test results that they've had when they were tested on the 5th and 6th day.
Okay, where are we at this point in terms of verification?
Well, we already got the names of these contacts and we are now going through our database to get the results of these cases so that we will know who among them turned positive so that we can submit to the Philippine Genome Center as well.
When did you start contact tracing? Because we only now know that they're positive with a mutation from India, but then we do know that they tested positive as soon as within the quarantine period. When did you begin the contact tracing?
Well, actually, the Bureau of Quarantine, who is in charge of doing this contact tracing for these individuals turning positive, no? So initially did this, they got the manifesto of the flight, and forwarded it to us during the time that we were conducting our investigation of it.
Okay, so it's now still underway. How confident are you, Dr. Vejere, that you have stemmed the transmission, at least from these two cases?
Well, for now, we can say that they were completely isolated. So when they got back to their local governments, they were already non-infectious. And we can ensure people that the variant may not be able to spread within their locality. What we are focusing on right now would be the co-passengers of these two individuals, where we have identified, as I've said, 6 individuals from case 1 and 26 individuals from case 2.
Is it difficult to get a hold of these 32 individuals all in all?
Very challenging, actually, ma'am, no? Because, of course, we need to locate them at the first step would be for us to locate them. And if I may just inform you that before we were able to locate this case number two, we had to go through the officials of the specific area and our officials in that specific region, because the cell phones and telephone numbers that they give would sometimes not be correct. So they were not answering, the phone was dead and all. So it's really kind of difficult, especially with this time elapsed already.
So out of the 32 individuals, how many have we officially contacted?
We were able to get about 13 already that we were able to verify as to the location and as to the existence of these specific individuals in their locality. So we're still looking for the others.
So that's where we should focus now, as you said, because yes, we don't know if they have tested positive or are, at worst case scenario, are asymptomatic.
Yes, so that would be a part of the protocol that we are currently undertaking. But we are at least assured that all of these individuals are quarantined at the national level when they arrive. So that is our safeguard for now.
Okay, good. Now, on to the travel history of these two cases. One man came from Oman, the other from the UAE. No travel history at all to India. I understand that the health secretary has said that he will be recommending for a ban, is it? Is he going to suggest a travel ban on flights coming from these two nations?
That has to be discussed in the IATF if we are going to issue out a restriction from these two countries. But right now, we have this ban among five countries. That would be India, Nepal, Sri Lanka, Bangladesh, and Pakistan.
Right.
What we are doing right now as to the protocols in our borders would be, we have revised it already that we can be more confident that these people, when we endorse them to the local governments, had been adequately quarantined or isolated. So we have revised it to 10 days at the national level. And we also have revised the testing protocol that it be done on the seventh day, because experts have said that the residual risk of these people still transmitting infections would be very, very low already if you test them on the seventh day.
Mm-mm. And when you compare the protocols that we have in place to what they have in India, do you think that our protocols will be enough to safeguard the public in this case? It enters and there is community transmission? Or are safeguards already there strong enough that they will prevent a community transmission, doctor?
Well, we try to assess day by day on how our response is doing and how we are coping with the influx of these cases. If we compare it with India, the country or India has had a lot of these mass gatherings that they have done. And as we always say, when you get infected and there is a rise in cases, there are a multitude of factors that has to be considered. And in India, the variants was the tip of the iceberg. No? So considering that there had been a lot of breaches in their protocols. Here in the country, we have once every now and then. No? So we hear of these breaches in protocol. But basically, our citizens are more cooperative. And I think the response is going to be critical that all actors in the sector and in the community will play its role. So hopefully we don't get to that part where there are a lot of breaches and these numbers will double or triple in the coming months.
The last time we talked, you talked about the travelers who actually came from India who tested positive for COVID-19. What is the latest on those cases? And have we run genome sequencing on the samples taken from them?
Yes, there were 155 that I've mentioned before that came from India or passed through India, and they were all isolated and quarantined. Five of them were identified to be positive individuals. We have sent the samples to the Philippine Genome Center. One was able to qualify for this criteria for these specimens that were sent, and one case turned out to be negative for any of the variants of concern, we only had this A lineage identified in this individual. There is still another one that is still to be processed for genome sequencing among these five. Three of these five individuals are still in isolation, and two have recovered the virus.
Okay. Now, you were talking about the ban on entry from five countries. This, though, expires this Friday, May 14. The one in inbound passengers who traveled to India, Nepal, Sri Lanka, Bangladesh, and Pakistan. Of course, this is to prevent the entry of the variant that was first detected in India. What is the likelihood, Undersecretary, that the ban will be extended? What's your assessment at this point?
Well, at this point, as a health person, I would want to recommend that this be extended because we are seeing the cluster of cases in these areas. Although the variant, the Indian variant, has not been officially detected in some of these countries, but still, we would like to err on that side of caution. So the DOH already has recommended to the Office of the President. We will be transmitting a memo for the President today if we can be able to extend until the end of the month, because this is part of the recommendation of the WHO and our experts that we extend until the end of the month this ban among these five countries.
Okay, now I want to jump to the issue of the vaccination rollout. We just heard from Mayor Scott Moreno, I don't know if you caught that report before we got to you on air. He's complaining of the slow pace of the vaccine rollout, even saying that there are millions of vaccines in storage facilities. How true is this? And why is there this slow pace of the vaccine rollout despite vaccines being already here in the country, Undersecretary?
Well, as far as we are concerned, the distribution, the percentage of distribution is about 60% already for now. We have to understand that the vaccines, the bulk of the vaccines that we have right now, were delivered in tranches daily from the past week over the weekend and also last Monday. So everything is being delivered right now and distributed to all of the regions, all of the local governments, so that we can ramp up vaccination. So if ever there was this kind of gap, maybe last week because of the lack of these vaccines, but all of the vaccines that we have right now has just been delivered about 3 or 4 days ago. So we asked our local governments that please be patient. The distribution will be ramped up starting today, and they will receive their allocated vaccine soon.
Okay. What about the expiration date? The concern about that? And the wastage as well. Where are we in terms of wastage? And are you fully confident that vaccines will be used before they expire?
Yes. People have to understand that all of the vaccines now available all over the world only has the longest period of expiration would be just for 6 months, because that's how they manufacture it now. Mm-hmm. So from the global chain distribution negotiations, usually countries would really receive this kind of expiration. And when we received the AstraZeneca vaccines, we were informed of this June and July. So what we will do would be that we will be giving the first 525,000 doses to those who initially had their AstraZeneca last March for their second doses. And for the rest of the 1.5 million AstraZeneca vaccines, we will be distributing across the country that it be given as first doses, because we are guaranteed by the WHO that they will give the second doses come June of this year. And that will still be part of this interval that we are looking at for AstraZeneca vaccines. So we are assuring the public that nothing will be wasted. We are currently averaging about 40,000 to 60,000 jabs per day. And if we try to compute these vaccines that for AstraZeneca with this expiring date, in just 45 days, we will be able to finish all of this and we will consume it and nothing will go to waste.
Okay, so are you also looking, though, at possible wastage? Because there are certain, some of these vials contain multiple doses and, the desired number of people may not turn up at a given day. Are you also looking at that?
Well, we have anticipated that since the start of this vaccination program, because at the outset, we were already receiving this multiple vial or multiple doses per vial.
Right.
And we have trained and seasoned vaccinators who had been doing these jobs using multiple dose vials for the longest time, so they know what to do. And we have not received report that our wastage has reached or exceeded that targeted number of wastage per vaccine. So with this, we are assured that we are not wasting these vaccines, and we all know how valuable this is for every Filipino.
Exactly. The target, Undersecretary Virheria, is 70 million vaccinated before the year ends. We've had numerous analysts. We've talked to them, and they're saying this is not going to be a realization at the rate we're going. I have one analyst even saying that to reach that will take about 10 years if we continue at this pace. So what should happen for you to be able to meet the 70 million target by the end of the year, Undersecretary?
Well, actually, Secretary Galvez has already revised this target because we are seeing that there is a slowdown in the supplies of vaccines globally. All of these targets are really flexible because we rely on the supply of vaccines coming from international sources. So he has recently revised this to just 50 million. But in any case, I would just like to clarify to the public that our main goal right now is to protect our vulnerable. And protecting our vulnerable means that we would be focusing on inoculating those senior citizens and those with comorbidities and healthcare workers, because the primary effect that we expect from our vaccines is for us to reduce severe cases and to reduce hospitalizations. Now, with the incoming vaccines right now, it is estimated, because we already have confirmed that deliveries will come in also by June, that by June we will have a total almost of 20 million doses already. So hopefully this kind of target will be met, and we are now have partnered with the private sector. Actually, we had been doing this for the longest time, but right now we are going to ramp up efforts together with the private sector to achieve the 120,000 doses per day that we are envisioning, so that we can reach this more people, we can scale up, and we can speed up vaccinations.
Talking about private sector, I'm sure you know of the controversy surrounding this proposed mega vaccination site. You have businessman Ricky Razon putting up this mega vaccination site, but there's a controversy now surrounding it. So let me ask you, how beneficial would it be that this kind of a site is erected? How beneficial would this site be to the vaccine rollout?
Well, it expands the access of the public to vaccination sites, because currently our vaccination sites are small vaccination sites in different locations. When we have these huge vaccination sites, more people can go there, more people can be scheduled within the day. Because right now, local governments also are limited by these small vaccination sites and a small number of vaccinators. That's why we cannot really ramp up the testing capacity or the vaccination of these people. Now, if we have huge vaccination sites, we can ramp up, we can speed up, and we can scale up our vaccination efforts.
So it's something that the DOH has signed off on.
Excuse me. Yes.
It's all right. Okay, so you're fully supportive of this. In fact, you had signed off on this. Is that correct?
Yes, we were part of the discussions, actually, and we were part of those who requested this support from the private sector, that they can allow us to use also their establishments or even this huge vaccination site, so that we can be able to scale up our vaccination efforts.
Okay. Undersecretary Maria Rosario Virheria, spokesperson of the DOH, thanks again for talking to us. Take care. Keep
safe.
Thank
you very much. Thank you.
All right, we're going to take a break now. Coming up, the chief presidential legal counsel telling people to use common sense in determining whether President Duterte is making a joke on key issues or not. More on that when we come back. Dateline Philippines will return after this break. Stay with us here on AMC. We are back. You're still with Dateline Philippines. Here's another look at our headlines this noon. Health officials seeking stricter border controls for travelers from the Middle East. That's after two overseas Filipinos tested positive for the COVID-19 variant first detected in India. The cities of Makati and San Juan begin their rollout of Pfizer's coronavirus jabs. The president's chief legal advisor advising the public to use common sense to determine if Mr. Duterte is making a joke or not. And dozens are killed as the conflict between Israel and Islamists in Gaza intensifies. Back with more news, Manila's top diplomat asserts only the Foreign Affairs Department should be making pronouncements on the West Philippine Sea. Secretary Teodoro Loxin Jr.'s statements is in response to spokesperson Harry Roque's claim the Julian Felipe Reef is outside the Philippines' exclusive economic zone. Loxin said only the DFA could speak for the president on matters of foreign affairs. Maritime law expert Jay Batong Bakal also refuted Roque's claim. He points out Julian Felipe Reef is well inside the country's 200 nautical mile exclusive economic zone.
Nasa loob po yan ang ating exclusive economic zone. No? Dahil po doon, yung likas yaman dagat po dyan, katulad ng mga pangisdaan, mineral, mga petrolyo, ay sa Pilipinas po dapat, no? Kung pati nga po siya ng, dahil pati siya ng exclusive economic zone. Yung sinasabi po niya na mayroon kasing na hindi siya under our possession, no, dahil malayo po yan siguro sa pag-asa. Tama naman po na malayo siya sa pag-asa, pero hindi po kailangan ng possession para po mapapunta sa atin yung karapatan sa likasyaman dagat dyan. No? Yung karapatan po natin ay base sa pagiging, dahil sa nasa loob siya ng ating exclusive economic zone.
The fishermen to whom President Duterte made a campaign promise to confront China's maritime incursions dismayed it was only a joke. Fisherman Carlo Montehermoso says he had hoped that the Chinese vessels would be gone and Filipinos would be free to fish in the area after Duterte made that promise. But 5 years later, he says nothing has changed with the Chinese Coast Guard still driving away Filipino fishermen from the area.
Alam namin sir, kaming mangingisda lahat dito, matutulungan kami sa yung sinabi ko sa kanya eh. Yun lang pala, joke lang pala yung sinasabi niya ngayon. Eh kami nung mangingisda dito, masamang loob namin. Siyempre yun lang sinabi niya, nasaan namin yun na gagawin niya. But sinabi niya yung joke-joke lang. Bakan din sir, joke-joke lang din siya naging presidente natin.
Montehermoso now says Filipinos should be more discerning in choosing candidates in the 2022 elections.
Pag-isipan na lang mabuti sir kung sino talagang yung makakatulong talaga sa ating mga kababayan. Kasi pag Duterte naman, ganun lang din. Kung anong pulo, bunga ng bangka.
But for Presidential Legal Counsel Salvador Panelo, it's easy to determine whether or not the president is joking. He says the public should just use their common sense. Panelo insists Duterte's jet ski remark during the 2016 campaign was only meant to amplify his opposition against China's expansive claim in the West Philippine Sea.
He said that to dramatize the fact that he will not allow China to assault the sovereignty of this country. I think that was clear enough. For me, that was very clear during the campaign. You will know when the president is joking by using one's common sense.
Panelo also believes Duterte was not referring to majority of Filipinos when he said they were stupid for believing his campaign remark. He says that insult was only aimed at the president's critics. Well, let's talk about the debate, the one that didn't happen. Not the one where the president talked about how he would ride a jet ski to lay claim on the Spratlys. Okay, maybe we'll talk about that later on as well. See, the aborted debate, according to some, would have been a great opportunity to inform the public about the West Philippine Sea issue. But since the president withdrew, that's not going to happen anymore. And now that it seems like the government no longer wants to talk about it, whose task is it to make sure that the discourse continues? Joining us now, Virgel Santos, trustee of the Center for Media Freedom and Responsibility. Virgel, nice to see you again. Thanks for joining us today.
Good to see you too, Carmina.
How have you been?
Never better. I don't know about them, but I'm fine.
All right, now let's talk about this. What is media's role now in making sure that the discourse continues? Because a lot of people were thinking that debate would have really informed the public, but that's not going to happen anymore. So what's media's role now?
I think it is the duty of every journalist to push the issue, to a point where it can be sorted once and for all. That would have happened if the debate had at all happened, but it did not. I mean, I was hopefully surprised that the president was finally coming out of his comfort zone monologue, you know, and allowing himself to be questioned and debated. But of course, my lingering fear was that he was simply bluffing, and he was. So he simply walked out of it, walked out of his own challenge. I mean, and that deprived us of an opportunity for this West Philippine Sea issue to be sorted in a civilized and reasoned process.
But, okay, so let's talk about that even further. How tough do you think will it be to do that, to continue the discourse, considering there is no national policy on this?
It seems to me that the whole regime, well, except for people who have no business inserting themselves in the debate, the whole regime is backing out of the discussion. And if at all they take up the issue, it is to raise half-truths and fiction and whimsies. This is all. But you see, Carmina, the issue is plain enough. I mean, it's plain enough. The First Philippine Sea is our territory. The president gave it away. We want it back. It's as simple as that. I cannot understand whatever effort they do to complicate, to confuse the issue. Possibly certain people might be confused. And certain people to them, the issue might be obscured. In fact, it is, Attorney Panelo himself is confused. He has an uncommon sense, uncommon appreciation, common sense. You know, he thinks that people should understand that the president is joking about a truly serious issue like the West Philippine Sea, issues about sovereignty and livelihood. He thinks this is common sense. You see, this is what's happening today. That's what I'm saying, that this effort to separate fact from fiction, to separate reason from whimsy, should be intensified, and the media should be part of this campaign, because that is the media's duty.
Yeah.
I mean, to help bring enlightenment to all this confusion and darkness.
Yeah, but how can you have a dispassionate discussion on this when any talk about it by anyone outside of the government now has been branded as just part and parcel of partisan politics? That's become the narrative now, Ferhel.
If anyone who is able to somehow show that this is something something reasonable, something easy enough to understand, should be able to understand as well that there is no politics here. I mean, I cannot even understand how Justice Carpio should be branded as political at all. I mean, when from the start he made it clear that this is all about national patrimony. This is all about sovereignty. This is about the future of this nation. I mean, I cannot understand.
Now, what are the challenges now, Verhel, before media, if it wants to continue this discourse?
Well, you are doing it now. You are putting me on for one thing. I am very grateful for that because I feel it not only my pleasure, but my duty to come out and provoke. I mean, media should provoke things like a debate, provoke all reasonable takes on an issue. And this is what you're doing. I can see the justice himself going on a number of platforms since the president would not debate with him. He has decided, it seems to me, to simply take questions and on his own try to sort things out. I think this is okay. Probably we could help town. We could hold town halls. I mean, we should be doing this well ahead of the coming elections.
Now, why do you say that?
No, because the president is looking to it. I mean, you can see that the president. It is easy to make a case that someone like the president, someone like this president, would try to escape accountability. He's always done that, even as mayor of Davao City, and he would only be able to do that if a surrogate or someone from a family from the dynasty is elected to succeed him. This is very dangerous. This makes it an existential issue for this nation. Hmm. Because once another Duterte surrogate succeeds him, we're finished.
And this discussion will continue. I mean, this whole situation will continue.
Oh, yes, definitely. I mean, it is not, they're saying that it is difficult to sort joke from seriousness and all those. It's so easy to do that. Hmm. All you have to do is look at the president's actions and you will realize that the president, by his own actions, show his ridiculous submissiveness toward the Chinese. I mean, this is easy. He gave away the West Philippine Sea. He hosted a gaming operations that themselves are outlawed in China. He is giving instant visas to Chinese hordes of Chinese arrivals. He has made the Philippines a captive market for Sinovac and Sinopharm. What else do we need to see to show that the president is extending ridiculous favors to this government?
Finally, because we're running out of time, they're telling me to wrap up. I want to talk about the debate where he had promised the fishermen that he would ride a jet ski. Let's talk about that jet ski bravado. Candidate Duterte then had the platform to amplify his rhetoric. He made use of it. And obviously, yes, his supporters were smitten enough to vote him into office.
Yes.
We are months away from the next elections. What are your thoughts about media's task in the coming exercise?
The media should provide every platform for debate, for discourse. And it should be an elevated discourse, a reasonable discussion of issues. Not joke, not all these things. And by the way, they're saying that the president was joking when he said he would just jet ski to that island. Mm-hmm. I mean, I thought I could believe it, you know, because he said he would have himself delivered by a ship to some point from the island and from there jet ski and plant a Philippine flag. I thought that was dramatic. Mm-hmm. I thought a president who would have done that would have done a great deal for the sovereignty of this country. But of course, he was joking.
And we're going to have to leave it at that. Verhel Santos, trustee of the Center Media for Freedom and Responsibility. Thank you, Verhel, for joining us.
My pleasure and duty. Yes.
So keep safe. Keep safe. I mean it. Take care.
You too. Thank you.
All right. We're going to take a break now. Still ahead, dozens die in the latest clashes between Israel and the Palestinian Islamist group Hamas. Stay with us for that when we come back. You're watching Dateline Philippines here on ANC.